This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. In the main business headlines today, Theresa May's Brexit speech, Xi Jinping's Davos speech, and also the latest on Felda. I'm Melissa Idris, with me Sharad Kutan and Julian Ng this morning. UK Prime Minister Theresa May said that the UK intends to leave the European Union's single market. She said the UK will not be seeking a half-in, half-out relationship with the EU. Here she is.
Britain wants to remain a good friend and neighbour to Europe. Yet I know there are some voices calling for a punitive deal that punishes Britain and discourages other countries from taking the same path. That would be an act of calamitous self-harm for the countries of Europe. And it would not be the act of a friend. Britain would not, indeed we could not, accept such an approach.
That was UK Prime Minister Theresa May talking about, in her speech yesterday in Bloomberg, I think it was a widely expected or anticipated speech, trying to get more details about the Brexit plan.
So I think she tries to put a very positive face on this move. She tries to make the argument that this could be a win-win for all stakeholders. But for some commentators following the speech, it really sounded like a have-your-cake-and-eat-it kind of a scenario, which is kind of an impossibility. You can't have your cake and eat it. There are going to be tough trade-offs. And that's something she says that she's willing to do. In fact, she said, better no deal than a bad deal. And I think that's also something that rung out quite strongly from that press conference.
I think the enormity of concluding these talks with the EU cannot be understated, because the cornerstone of that negotiations with the EU are the trade deals, right? And she wants to set up these trade deals with America, with other places. And she wants that the kind of equal status as a partner with the EU. All of these will take a lot of time, much longer than the 2 years that she suggests. And in the meantime, while waiting, markets and businesses could be paralyzed.
Yeah, the uncertainty just paralyzes markets.
I think she makes very explicit that they don't want to put businesses in that position. They don't want business feeling they're going to fall off a cliff. In fact, that was an expression used. But I think the other thing, the question of how can markets be and business be reassured, perhaps is information and details, right? The how Britain's going to proceed. And that's where she was quite short on. Mm. And in fact, she almost preempted the questions about her lack of detail by saying that she wasn't going to pander to the press and give them the headlines that they want, the scoops that they want. She was only going to release information at a time that she felt was beneficial to Britain in negotiating.
What do you think
deals.
Of that strategy then? I mean, do you think that was the right move?
Well, I don't know how the British press, will take this, and how the British public will take this. But what's interesting is the first question off the bat during the Q&A, which was very short, by the way, was her being asked about the turnaround in her own analysis of the Brexit, right?
She was Remain camp. Yeah.
And she said, took it squarely, and she said, well, okay, I was in the Remain, it's not a secret. But the question is, now that the British public has spoken, my government will follow through with that.
Exactly. I think that she would have to come to terms with the kind of ambivalence that exists not only within her, but with the British public as well. For example, when voting for Brexit, were the voters aware of the consequences of the Brexit? A lot of polls and surveys suggest that they don't. But now there is an official vote, and she perhaps wants to keep to the spirit of those kind of votes. And I think that at the end of the day, I don't know whether this is paying just lip service by Theresa May or whether she has anything up her sleeves, because somebody like Donald Trump may want to go to bed with, with Theresa May, filling up the kind of vacuum that the EU has left behind.
Well, for me, one of the most interesting points in her speech was the decision to put the final deal up to parliamentary vote. And that's been an issue that's been hard fought in the UK, especially given that the Conservative Conservatives have, I think, a very small majority within the parliament, and there are certain members within Tories that don't support the Brexit. So a win could be hard won here.
Also, another point I think she makes, which she appealed to the four nations that make up the United Kingdom, you know, in going along with this plan. And I think this particularly perhaps directed to the Scottish, because the Scots have been very critical.
Right.
In fact, you know, the Scots voted overwhelmingly to stay. So this is also an opportunity for Scottish nationalists to push their agenda, even as Britain, UK and England want to pull away from the EU. Scotland claims that it wants to stay with the EU and might push their agenda that
That's
way.
Right.
So I think
very interesting. I think when that referendum was held in Scotland, they decided to continue to be part of the UK because of the EU support of EU in the backyard. But now that that is off the table, they want to kind of revisit that. And that is going to be a flashpoint for Theresa May.
Also, I think the point that she makes is that this is a split with the common market with the EU, not with European values. And so she says they do respect diversity. Britain still wants to have people from all over the world, including Europe, there as talent adding to the economy. So she constantly tried to put a positive spin on this.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
This was not a campaign of hate, that, you know, the exit isn't about, you know, rejecting Europe and its values.
I think one of the main issues for the EU is as well is how they're going to make an example out of the UK, right? In their minds, they're probably asking whether if the UK does this, what if it encourages other smaller nations to do the same thing? So it kind of have boiled down to a face issue, how the EU would take this. And I think at the end of the day, this is going to be a war on public relations. And Theresa May, while she wants to look good, at the end of the day, she is going to play the victim card, and she's going to frame it in such a way where the EU is the bad guy, and the EU also wants to avoid that at all costs.
Right, yeah.
Well, okay, I think, you know, the question, of course, of the criticisms that the EU faced in the campaign, I think some Britons will say the legitimate criticisms about the lack of accountability of Brussels, the fact that that sovereignty was taken away, that a lot of decisions were being made without reference to the concerns and desires of the British public. And all components of the union.
Yeah, it was very centralised decision-making.
So that, I think, the question remains, can the European Union address those questions? The lack of transparency, the lack of accountability, the skewed way in which resources were used, overly bureaucratic procedures. All these things need to be answered too on the European side of the story.
Well, let's move on from the UK over to China, where Chinese President Xi Jinping has urged global business and political elites to reject trade wars and protectionism. This is his first public rebuttal of the policies advocated by the incoming president, Donald Trump. Here he is in his address in the World Economic Forum at Davos, defending free trade.
Any attempts to cut off flows of capital, technologies, products, industries, and people between economies and channel the ocean waters back into isolated lakes and creeks, this is simply not possible. And indeed, it runs counter to the historical trend.
I love partly the beauty. If you listen to some of his speech, the use of this kind of idiomatic expressions. He also had one expression when he talked about, locking yourself in a room. Yes, it shuts out the wind and the rain, but it also stops light and air.
I have the transcript to that. Pursuing protectionism is like locking yourself in a dark room, which would seem to escape the wind and the rain, but also block out the sunshine and air.
Yeah.
So that was
part of his Chinese speech. Language itself is very flowery. And sometimes, you know, very literal in that sense. But, you know, China has found itself, ironically, to be in a position of a champion for world trade, globalization, when they used to be just a spectator by the sidelines, and the U.S. was the mouthpiece for globalization. And now it's so ironic that this has, the tables have turned, and Donald Trump becoming more protectionist, whereas China calling for globalization.
Well, the thing, of course, is also, I think, coming back to Trump, is perhaps contradictions that have been pointed out in his policy. So, strong fiscal stimulus back home that will make the dollar stronger. And then the consequence, now his criticism that the US dollar is too strong,
right.
You know, and I think a lot of speculation by observers about whether this was too strong in relation to the yuan or just too strong generally, and how he can't actually have his cake and eat it in this regard.
Yeah, I think also I don't blame them. Don't blame China for going on the defensive, because Trump has hurled so much diatribe against them about being currency manipulators and being job thieves of American employment. So China has to come out on the defense and saying that, hey, this is something that is not bad. We need to work together so that there's more business to go around. By the way, China is releasing their latest GDP numbers on Friday, and it's going to be expected to be 6.5 to 7%, which is consistent with a lot of commentators that we speak to, saying that there would be no hard landing for China.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this dilemma within China where the support of GDP is creating a lot of speculation, rising debt, soaring property prices, and questions about China's commitment to reform.
Very quickly, he also warned of a trade war, which is interesting because of the reported statement by one Trump aide that said that if there was a trade war, the U.S. would win. And you might want to put that against the statement made by Ravi Menon from the Monetary Authority of Singapore, who also spoke of concerns around a trade war.
I think that as far as that is concerned, China is using a very two-pronged approach. On one hand, you have their agitations in the South China Sea. And on the other hand, they're building all these roads and railways and infrastructure, you know, the One Belt, One Road project. And they just announced that deal with Pakistan, right?
That's right. So which deal is this, Julian?
Well, it has to do with energy supply. So I think is that what you're talking about?
No. They actually, this is a China-Pakistan economic corridor, which is worth about $46 billion in investments.
That's
and
right.
India sort of took a pot shot at China for being friends with Pakistan.
Talks. Yes, okay. So that one. Okay, so India said that it will not hold talks with Pakistan as long as its neighbor continues to support terrorism in Southeast Asia. That is according to India. But we'll have to see that relationship between Pakistan and China clearly is continuing. Okay, it's 7:47 right now. We've got a look at the local business news after this, including details about Felda, perhaps looking at disposing its overseas assets. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.